Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Morning, Giles.
Morning.
You're having a few mental health problems this week, aren't you?
Yes,
perfectly, I mean, I'm perfectly legit mental health problems. It's not just you being barking mad as usual. Yesterday, you said something about the podcast, and I said as a joke, well, I thought I'd not bother doing the podcast tomorrow, and then you replied in earnestness, yeah, no, I don't see how we can do it because it's like a fucking nightmare, and like, you... what are we going to say, and I'm never going to write again.
No, exactly. I think we shouldn't, and I was going to call Ben and say, what are we going to do?
Well, I have come up with a few solutions to this problem. The problem with the podcast, not necessarily the problem of your column.
Not necessarily the problem of the invasion of Ukraine.
One of my solutions is actually a solution to that as well, which is that I've signed you up for the Ukrainian Defence Force.
God, the doorbell's rung. Is that him already?
Go and get it then.
I was remembering that my father, when his journalistic career began, was in 1962 during the Cuban Missile Crisis, and he was at Berkeley University for the year, and he started filing pieces to Punch, and unfortunately I couldn't find it because I think when he died I threw out all his old pieces, but he was in the evacuation from San Francisco when they all left to go into the hills in San Francisco when they thought they were sort of seconds away from being nuked. My dad wrote a piece from the hills on his typewriter, clankety clankety clank, outside thing, and I was.
But what was it about?
Well, that's what I don't know, and I can't ask him. Ben was confessing before he got here that he had trouble sleeping that when Putin said his moving to a higher level of nuclear alert, which has now been talked down in the papers as if he doesn't actually start on such a high alert as we are. He was basically, they were like properly, it's like with wine, you bring it up out of the cellar, then you stand it vertical, then you open it, then you put it in a decanter, eventually pour it into a glass, and then you drink it. And he was like, I have in glass Emma Belt to drink, but actually he's just brought them out of the cellar to come to a room temperature, but he's not actually going. But Ben was admitting that I too have been struggling with it. So I thought maybe you could do bitty stuff.
It is difficult when you write sort of light-hearted or glib columns when something terrible is happening, because the readers think you're doing it on purpose, and they think, how can you make jokes at a time like this? And you think, well, because that is my job and I have to keep doing it no matter what's happening. And it is annoying. And it is difficult to write anything in an atmosphere of kind of negative anticipation. So when you're writing and thinking, everyone's going to hate this because, or maybe they will hate this because, or everyone will say this because, it's then very difficult to sort of think clearly and have any sort of free thought. So I'm very, very sympathetic. Luckily, no one reads my column, so I could write about Tom Hardy being late, and like one person on Instagram said, "Yay, love Tom Hardy too." And I was like, "That wasn't the point."
The thing is that what happens in this, there's so much to say about it. But when there is a massive news story that's overtaking everything, whether my job is to address it or ignore it, and if I ignore it and make jokes, I will get most people below the line all the time saying, "Thank you for giving us a laugh at a time like this." And we had that with Brexit, and I had that with
pandemic.
The pandemic, and you will get a small handful saying, why are you making jokes at a time like this, or saying that they're not funny. I wrote on Tuesday a notebook column with five items that were all about some level Russia, sort of taking the piss, you know, but not. And a woman called Vanessa Morrison complained below the line and wrote, sorry, Giles, not convinced this is one of your greatest columns. Other people piled on top of her. saying, what are you doing, saying this is the thing, he's trying to write a column on the day that war breaks out. She then replied, in reply to those below who disagreed with me, my comment was a bit mean. I apologise, Giles. I'm not at my best at work at the moment. This is a below-the-line commentator retracting her negative comment about my column, realising the climate we're in. I'm distracted. Why should you be any different? I suppose I was really hoping for a miracle, something to really make me laugh, as Giles' words usually do. Please don't be afraid of making us laugh, Giles, even if it's a bit close to the bone. We need it just as we need the sailor who sank his employer's yacht, the lady with the sunflower seeds, the tractor guy who stole the tank, and the brave men on Snake Island. Of course, the situation isn't funny. It's desperately, desperately sad, and it's scary. But it's at times like this that we need people like you, Giles, even more than usual. To which I replied, well, I'm glad you've rephrased your original effort. I'm afraid that I have the same sense as most people, that we are hurrying towards the end of the world quicker than even the most pessimistic among us might have thought. I fear the conclusion of everything. It is desperately scary, but my job is to write jokes. And that is how I feed my family. Today, as the convoy edges towards Kiev, I am writing another funny restaurant review for publication in 10 days' time. But will you or I be alive in 10 days? I'd say it's 50-50. I'm going over dramatic there. I think it's better.
No, really? You over dramatic?
So, on the even chance that we are, people will expect, which is different from want, to see a funny restaurant review in their Saturday paper. So I'm sitting here in my office, sad and lonely and scared, and just wanting to hug my children, trying to write it. And tomorrow, if my wife and I wake in our beds, we will record our supposedly funny podcast. And then I will write my funny column for Saturday. And for every one of these, there will be commenters who think it is their job to tell me I have failed, that I'm not funny and should have done better, or shouldn't be trying to be funny, or shouldn't be writing at all. And for once, just once, I really couldn't give a fuck what any of them thinks.
Why don't you just make your column that?
Okay, column. Moving on from that to a column about the situation. Here's a real thing. Can it be done in a Giles Corran column? I want to talk about the complainers. We talked about this briefly yesterday. You and I bitched over dinner. The people who thought that Brexit was the end of the world. A lot of my colleagues, a lot of the libtards, a lot of my dear, dear friends, colleagues on the papers, people, the Hugo Rifkins, the Marina O'Loughlins, the good left-of-centre commentators, Marina Hyde on The Guardian, who really thought that Brexit was, oh, Brexit, it's so terrible. Oh, no, Boris Johnson has come in and been the Prime Minister. It's the end of life as we know it. Oh, in the same year, David Bowie's died. Oh, no. Oh, George Michael, it's like a comet from God. It's so awful. Oh, Trump's been elected in Soja. Now we've got a pandemic. And they got so upset about people going out, oh, he's not wearing a mask on the train, we're all going to die. Boo-hoo. I spent 4 years saying, like, 6 years, I don't care about Brexit. Brexit doesn't make any difference to anything. I'm not bothered about Brexit. Boris Johnson, Donald Trump, these wankers come and these wankers go. Jeremy Corbyn, it doesn't really matter. Let's keep on laughing. The pandemic, fuck it. Now I'm prepared to admit, fuck, I can barely function. What do these people do? Where do they go? What have they got left in the tank?
Who told you that the world is going to end?
Well, it's kind of residual, you know, because basically, you know, I am older than you and I am much older than Ben. And I spent the 80s worrying about global thermonuclear Armageddon. I have mentioned, I think, on this podcast before, the moment in 1982 when, on the way back from the Swiss cottage baths in the crocodile, holding hands with Nicholas Potter, known as Tiggy, now, funnily enough, osteopath to the stars. Mm-hmm. Hi there, Nick, if you're listening, I could do with a back crunch before we all die. And we were walking along and he said, hey, Corin, because that's how we talked to each other then, what are you most scared of in the world? And I said, sharks, of course. I said, what about you? And he said, global thermonuclear Armageddon. And at that moment, basically, my childhood ended. And I then spent 8 years barely able to sleep, worrying about, you know, in the early 80s, worrying, there was always on the telly, we're going to die, there's the mutual destruction, we can blow each other up 1,000 times over. And my mum would say, oh, don't worry, the Russians don't want to kill us because then we'd kill them and they love their children too. Oh, no, that was Sting who said the Russians love their children too. But anyway, all of that, and then it all became okay and now we're fucked again. And so I've had all the nightmares and they're all ready to go. I spent the 80s and most of the 90s with nightmares about mushroom clouds. But anyway,
You're managing to keep it together in front of the kids, though, which is...
Because the job of a father. Mm-hmm. Because my mum, when I used to say to her, she tucked me up in bed, like, just put her fag to rest on the lintel of my desk right at the edge of the door, and then came over to kiss me goodnight before she went out for dinner. And I said, my mum, we're all going to die in a nuclear war. And my dad would be honking the horn outside because my mum was already half an hour late. And she'd go, no point worrying about what you can't do anything about, or no point worrying about what you can't affect. Worrying won't help. Night-night. Kiss. Okay, fine. But the job of a parent is to go, it's not going to happen. So Sam asked me in the car this morning, as he did every morning this week, Dad, are we all going to die in a nuclear war? And I went, no, definitely not. Mm-hmm. Now get out of the car while I cry.
taking into account your mood yesterday and your concerns about what's going to go in this podcast, forget your column for your subject. You're going to have to work that out somehow in your own time. But on this podcast, what it's going to be is a quiz for you. Don't look at the answers. It might be over quite quickly, actually.
Over before Christmas, that's what they said.
Oleg Luzhny, this is a hard question, is a Ukrainian...
An ice skating dancer.
No, he's a Ukrainian footballer. He's a Ukrainian footballer.
Of course, goalkeeper.
But who did he play... Which London club did he play for between 1999 and 2003? He's enlisted. He signed up. Oleg Luzhny.
I mean, are you sure he's not the... kleptocrat with a massive house in Highgate?
No, Arsenal. I thought you'd get that because, like, all men have an encyclopedic knowledge of all football players and where they played. Not Oleg Luzhny.
If you'd been at QPR, I'd have been on it like a car.
Okay, fine.
We can't afford Russians. Oh, we can now!
There has been some European countries have declared that they're going to ban Russian yachts from docking in their ports.
Didn't we talk about docking once before? Pegging, right. Well,
in Russian
pegging will be made totally illegal. Russian, I will not peg this.
Yeah, Russian docking. That doesn't sound like a good euphemism for anything, does it? So in a move to make Russians feel like sort of outcasts, and Russian billionaires in particular feel like outcasts.
Yes.
So they're saying
they're not going to be allowed to dock their beautiful yachts in Poland.
Nice, Sardinia, Costa Smeralda.
Oh, really?
They mean like desirable places. They haven't put it into place yet. They're thinking about it. But which oligarch owns the Solaris? Just guess.
Gordievsky.
Abramovich.
But that was so obvious.
Was it?
Who would put that in?
What is the national flower of Ukraine?
Daffodil.
It's not a...
Oh, that's Wales. It is the Edelweiss. No, that's Austria. The national flower of Ukraine. Is it a flower I've heard of? Is it a dandelion? Is it a marigold?
It's yellow.
Is it a buttercup? Like very much butter.
It's a sunflower.
No, what? Don't say. Is it a sunflower?
Yes. Sunflower. Can you name any of the bands who've pulled out of the Russian legs of their tours this year?
Well, the Beatles. Oh, you mean the names, not Ukrainian bands?
No, I mean...
Tears for Fears.
No.
Spiendel Belly.
Spiendel.
But it was demonstrating when my interest in pop music stopped. Sorry, the bands who are no longer playing... Well, what? And is ain't going to play Moscow, ain't going to play Sun City.
Not playing anywhere. No.
Who's not playing?
Sun City, is that in South Africa?
Ain't going to play Sun City was a song that was sung by, like, Bruce Springsteen and people.
Right.
Cliff actually went to play Sun City, as did Queen. Anyway, who's not going to play in Moscow? I have not heard of any bands at all. I don't know. Who are those ones with the beards? There's the posh ones.
ZZ Top.
I'm thinking of ZZ Mumford or whatever they're called.
Mumford and Sons.
One of them got chucked out of
trashed.
The band for
tweeting
he liked a book or something.
Jordan Peterson, yeah.
How did I score on your Ukrainian quiz?
Zero.
Right.
I wonder how listeners did at home.
No. I fucking switched off the radio.
Fall asleep.
Completely appalled. Be more from Esther and me in our kitchen after a short interlude. But to find out what I wrote about in the end, why not pick up a subscription to The Times and The Sunday Times and enjoy 1 month absolutely free? Just search thetimes.co.uk/Giles Corran has no idea. I've been promised that this will take you to an amazing offer, rather than just a website created by Ben randomly containing all my broadcasting mistakes. Although I'm sure that exists somewhere, it's just going to be up to you to find it.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Runfest Run is the UK's ultimate running festival, and it's back this May, just 20 minutes from Reading. Join me, Vassos Alexander, Chris Evans, Paula Radcliffe and other running royalty as we run by day and party by night with Sophie Ellis-Bextor, Top Loader, Basement Jacks and so many more. Tickets on sale at runfestrun.co.uk.
Interestingly, in a story unrelated to Russia.
Which you have somehow made all about Russia.
But no, because the story was London is the wealth capital of the world. They'd obviously prepared this story before we started.
I read that as London has named the most desirable city. This is a report produced by Knight Frank, who describes himself as global property consultants. I thought they were fucking estate agent, like Foxtons. Anyway, never mind.
Yes,
they've produced the wealth report that has named London the world's most desirable city, edging just ahead of New
Knight
York.
Frank, the estate agents have managed to get property sales into the paper. With the,
yeah, funnily enough. Yeah.
No, there's one. There's some actual... Now they're trying to expropriate all this Russian stuff, possibly Abramovich offloading his house in Kensington Park Gardens and another one at Canary.
It's only 15 million. I'm hoping to snap it up.
150 million, darling.
Is it 150?
God damn. You see, that's so funny, and that's so perfect, because I go on this thing, my wife doesn't really care about numbers, I go, how much was the chicken? She goes, I don't know, £12, £9.
Sure it's 150.
Yes, my darling, is like, if it was £15 million.
We would buy it.
Well, I was going to say, we probably wouldn't, we'd still, if it was £15 million, we could offer £15.
Yeah, exactly.
So, my wife wants to buy it for £1.50.
We'll put down a deposit.
She doesn't really understand,
put down a deposit.
It's £1 billion. We'll... No, it's 150 to 170 million, yeah?
Okay.
We can't even put down a deposit, my love. I don't live in Kensington Park Gate because your neighbours are all fucking Russians as well. Look, London is the wealth capital of the world, and I thought, fine, funny. I did a billionaires row column a few years ago.
Yeah, Hampstead Gun Suburb, right? And how grim it is.
Which I can't repeat because it's cut out and pinned to the downstairs live at your parents' house, so they for one will notice.
They will notice.
But about why would anyone want to live in Billionaires Row? And I thought you could imagine London as a city of billionaires. I was thinking yada yada. They did this without reference to Russia. And then now, obviously, we're talking about getting rid of the Russian houses. And I thought, okay, that brings us back to Billionaires Row. Abramovich setting up Kensington Palace Gardens, 150 to 170 million. And I was going to ask a number of things like, okay, so we're going to make Abramovich go. One or two estate agents have said they might not handle the sale, by the way. I love the fact that estate agents have seen a possibility to be slightly less bad than Putin. You know, obviously, they really want to sell the house because they can make... Because the 2% of 150 million,
it's
of course,
loads.
Is... They can make £3 million just boom, just like that. But they think, I might not actually... Well, I might. Actually, I will. Yeah. But I sort of shouldn't.
Yeah.
And so I'm thinking... But the point I'm saying... Okay, we get rid of Abramovich. The house is on sale for 170 million, everybody. Who do you think's going to buy it? A doctor? A teacher? Who the fuck do you think's going to buy it? Do you know who owns all the other houses?
China.
Well, I was going to say they've mooted China. I was going to say Saudi Arabia. The Saudis own most of Bishop's Avenue, who are funding a war in Yemen. So it's like, it's
a bit like if you get rid of Vladimir Putin, who's next? I mean, Alexei Navalny strikes me as being an all right
guy. He can't afford a house in Kensington Park Gate, though. That's the thing.
Navalny, lovely. He can come and live in Kentish Town.
Yeah, that would be nice, wouldn't it? Navalny could have a dacha in Gospel Oak while running Moscow, running Russia as a democracy, which is just really nice for like gay people, ethnic minorities, Jews. Mm-hmm. Everybody will be really happy there. All I wanted to say is if you were doing the thing, there is a column, and it can be at my end of the scale. If the Russians are made to take all their houses, who are you going to give it to? Where do you think wealth comes from? How do you accrue 170 million? We have to dismantle what we think of as good and desirable. We love money, we love greed, we love everything. It's all great. If you do that, the people at the top are all bad. I would have said the only one who's okay is J.K. Rowling, and half the world thinks that she's a turf and probably worse than a Russian. Mm-hmm. So there is no way of having that money and being good. So will the houses, we have to bring all the prices, will they come back to us?
You're sounding quite...
I've gone mad, Esther.
You're sounding quite Banksy about all of this.
Oh, yeah, man. I would like to do some stencils on
I don't
want to
say,
the things.
Actually, he's from Bristol, so top... Probably,
right. I'm gonna go. Oh, right. Is he from Bristol? Because that brings me to a story. Oh, you've got a really good story for some light relief.
All right.
Where I can use this accent. I can take it over. And you, Ben, it's no offence to you. I know that you don't come from places like this. I ain't taking the mickey out of yous. Now, I've got a story here. Tuesday, March the 1st. This is now, I'm now in the manic phase. You'll notice.
You really
before I'll start crying later. There's a story here. Rural men urged to share their problems, okay? So, I shouldn't read it in
people
the voice,
not...
but I will. It's from Will Humphreys, who's our countryside correspondent. I imagine Will Humphreys is the countryside correspondent. I imagine Will talks more like this, but anyway. Men in isolated rural communities are being urged to talk about... Sorry, I'm going to make a joke. Can I just do a trigger warning here? I'm going to make a joke about mental health problems.
Okay.
I don't think mental health problems are funny. God knows I suffer from all of them.
Yours are very funny.
Yeah, that's true. It's true. But other people's aren't, okay? So basically, men in rural places workplaces are being urged to talk about mental health problems after a survey showed they were less likely to seek support than men in the city. And I thought we have to try and get help and counselling to people in the countryside. The note I've written is, I be reet sad about that there potato weevil. And I thought to myself, what, the chaps in the countryside get really, really sad about that?
People not closing gates.
The price of cider, not closing gates, for example.
Townies moving in with their stupid half-trained dogs that bite my sheep on the ankle.
The problem, of course, we know about the problems of being a farmer, and we know that that's really depressing and all that kind of a thing.
Yeah.
But I would hope that you could skirt round the idea you can't make a joke about mental health, can you?
I don't think there's any way of writing that column without
writing it
massively distasteful.
Or it'd be about to rain. Oh, no.
And they're not sad about turnips or people not closing gates. And I just don't really think that you can.
But that's funny. You're absolutely completely right. And I'm determined that Ben should leave this in. It's tastefully edited. You're absolutely right. And here we are. What can you make jokes about and what not make jokes about? And what can I, Giles Corran, who's allowed to be a bit naughty, but we hope isn't disgusting, what can I say? My first thought is it's funny. I go, bait no use worrying about the potato weevil. Can't do nothing about it.
Right.
You know, all beer, processed cider, and he's left the gate. No, I think that. The fact is, I'm laughing about a stereotype, trying to tell myself that I'm not prey to the stereotype. Mm-hmm. And then we talk about it and we realise, no, mental health issues in the countryside are serious. Mm-hmm. It's not suitable for me to make jokes about, because we know about suicide amongst farmers.
You would love to be a farmer. If someone paid you this salary to be a farmer, you'd go and be a farmer.
Yes, I know, but I'd be the most miserable farmer that's ever been. Okay, so the world's most charismatic leader,
yeah,
is a comedian.
Yes.
Election pamphlets for some British comedians who might want to stand for election.
Okay.
Because Zelensky, you know, he's a comedian and, you know, he's brilliant and he's funny and he's clever and he's got a good set of says. So I was just thinking of things like David Walliams. Their pitch?
Right, okay, fine.
So David Walliams, if we come to global war, we obviously need a comedian running us, David Walliams, who could do things like, he could write, you know, Vlad and his smelly poos for children, and everyone would go, ooh, and he could dress up as a lady, or something like that. Or Reginald D. Hunter, who could just talk really slowly.
I didn't even know that you knew who Reginald D. Hunter was.
He's the one, literally, all my thoughts were about things like Morecambe and Wise, and Little Enough, but fuck, I need a modern comedian. And I did a show once with Reginald D. Hunter, and I was fucking furious about it. I did Richard Bacon's Beer and Pizza Club.
Yeah.
I was on this show with fucking Reginald D. Hunter and Russell Kane.
Yeah, oh God.
And me. And Richard, who's a mate of mine and got me on the show, who knows who pulled out fucking RuPaul. But got me on the show because someone had pulled out. And oh, don't worry, it's not that. You just chat and stuff. And I went on and, I'm a funny guy. You call me a funny guy? Think I'm a funny guy? Think I'm a clown? No, I'm a funny guy. Okay, I can do a TV. Quite difficult. Russell Kane, who's like, high energy comedian. Da, da, da.
Yeah.
And Reginald D. Hunter, I mean, I can't do his voice. But, you know, Reginald D. Hunter doesn't say anything that funny, but he says it so deep and so slow, and he has such great timing that I just felt like a twat every time I had to speak. So I just thought Reginald D. Hunter could be the Prime Minister talking in a really slow, deep voice and scaring the fuck out of Putin.
I like Reginald.
Jimmy Carr?
If we want to hasten.
Yes, I mean, I don't know. It's like, there's a Jimmy Carr. If Jimmy Carr was Prime Minister, woohoo. Michael McIntyre, just really, really, really. And then I'm into a restaurant. I was running around and I was just up and down the stage, walking. And then I got into my car and I had to go on the score. Oh, Waitrose! Those Waitrose Centrals. And ooh, hummus. Yeah, marvellous. Lovely. And I went to Russia. Ooh, on holiday. In a swimming pool. Ah.
I wonder if that column is going to be heavy lifting.
Yeah. I've got another one here, which I've written. My lead in is another shit Batman movie.
Right.
So they made another shit Batman movie, very funny review by Kevin Mayer, who liked it less than the person I read in the Mail, who quite liked it 3 stars. But Kevin gave it 2 stars. And he pointed out it was brilliant. Because I started thinking, how do you make it? I immediately read the big in the headline, I thought, right, shit Batman, how do you make a good Batman movie? And I thought, a funny way is to make Batman, I can do a Batman script, you know, Gotham 2022, da da da, and Batman goes.
Well, they made 2 good Batman movies. They made Batman and Batman Returns.
Which are you talking about?
Michael Keaton.
You said, yes. Was it called? Yes. They were brilliant. Okay, but look, the point that Kevin Mayer made that was genius, was he says it's, he talked about the Lego Batman movie.
Yes.
He said, you do Lego where he talks like that. And then he's got a song. And the song, I can't remember, but the song goes, dark, even darker, dead mom. And it's like, and he goes, and then Matey, whoever it is who's directed this one, has come along and basically made the Lego Batman movie, but not played it for laughs. And then I thought, oh, well, he's done the joke about how do you make a good Batman movie, is you make it out of Lego. What we need is the Lego Russian invasion of Ukraine.
Yep.
Did you notice that BBC has pulled strictly from Russia?
Yes. No, they've pulled their, they're not allowing them to, because obviously yes. Russia just franchises it, but
strictly.
Everyone is just, and what you see more, every time the new ones come in, I think that's really going to hurt.
The Taekwondo Federation yes. has stripped Putin of his honorary black belt, seventh dan in Taekwondo.
He's that as well. He's very
he
pleased
likes
with
his
that.
Taekwondo yeah. black belt.
And also it. Apple products. Apple products are going to stop supplying Apple products. And Apple really do like run the world. Like they really do.
That's a listicle. Yeah, that's quite good.
Tropicana juice.
That's quite funny.
Sunny
that
Delight.
Could be other things that have got to boycott. Soft toilet roll.
Soft toilet roll.
So they have to use scratchy stuff from the 70s. One other thought, possible actual column, if I do write a column, story in the Mail and the Times about the classics. People who've decided the classics are too much hard work to read.
I feel like we do this story every week.
I don't think we wrote about it. So that's what I was going to ask you.
You didn't write about it, but we have talked about it.
I know, but I'm just wondering about an actual column. So half of Britain's haven't read the books. I noticed that they interviewed these people who all claim not to have read anything, and then 95% of them said that War and Peace was the most boring book. And none of them have read it, obviously, but they all just say it's the most boring book. The point was, oh yes, and it's this sentence in the Daily Mail. The dullest classic was judged to be Leo Tolstoy's 1869 novel War and Peace, which was voted for by 51% of those surveyed. First of all, they haven't read War and Peace.
Yeah.
Also, there's a book about Russia at war.
Yeah.
It's a funny time to be saying that War and Peace is boring, isn't it?
Yes.
I could write a column.
But there's a whole thing about Tolstoy is that Tolstoy's not boring.
Why don't I? Yeah, exactly.
It's just very long.
And why don't I write? But the main thing is you read War and Peace and you skip the war bits, don't you? Because the piece is what's interesting. I could write a proper piece about War and Peace, the novel, and what it can teach us about the war now.
Do you actually know, though?
Nope. And I'd have to reread it, and I'm not going to because it's too long and boring.
Fine. So this is almost like, this podcast is almost like columns you could write if you knew loads of different things and had loads of time.
All my columns are that. All my columns are, if I knew anything at all and had loads of time,
exactly.
I would do this. But as it is, here's a list of comedy things we could ban.
I have got 3 hours, and this is what you can have.
Three? You've been listening to Giles Corran Has No Idea with me, Giles Corran.
And me, Esther Walker.
It's a Wireless Studios production for The Times, produced by Ben Mitchell. To find out what I wrote about in the end, you can pick up a copy of The Times or get a digital subscription. Just search thetimes.co.uk/Giles Corran Has No Idea. You can listen to us on The Times radio app or download from wherever you get your podcasts.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.